This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
This is Chris Abshire, Fort Collins, Colorado, and you are listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Time for Keeling Me Softly, and Keeler kind of thinks the referees are keeling Riley Moss softly. Maybe not even softly anymore. It's just right out there in front of us, man.
Yeah, it's not so soft anymore. It's they're killing him hard. It's premeditated ref violence right there.
Does feel like premeditated referee violence on Riley Moss. I mean, and Moss, Sean, like, I think, again, with what we get to watch, we don't get every angle, and maybe you do, but I just get what the common folk get on the television. So I don't get to see from start to finish how Riley Moss is playing, but here's the obvious answer. It just seems like Riley Moss is always right there. A lot of times guys just make great catches.
Yeah, you have to consider the quality in the context of the competition, too.
But right.
I think the other thing, and this is unfortunate, is sometimes, and there's no shock, our reputations precede us. If people have the word out on you, or another coach or another official or someone says, hey, and the refs say, no, we don't do that. Yeah, you do. You're human. If there's an idea of this is someone who, you know, in basketball, or commits a lot of fouls. Or the way that that Garrett Bowles used to, kind of hold a lot. And like Bowles, I guess it's upon Moss to recognize or maybe get some intel as to where some of this scrutiny is coming from and what he has to do to stop it. If he's got to buy somebody a picnic basket or Easter flowers to stop this happening, he might want to do that because they're gonna need him. We got an interesting 3 weeks coming up on that front.
Yeah, well, and this is what I wonder about, too, with Riley Moss. Is his job going to get a little easier with Patrick Surtain out? Because they're not going to just go to him every time. They're going to maybe spread it out and go all over the place.
No, that's a good point. And that's the other kind of spillover this that doesn't get talked about quite as much is it's so lopsided. What is he like? He's got to be top five in targets, right? Or is he one
gotta
or
be.
Two?
Yeah.
I think he's one or two. Because it's like, I ain't going there because PS2 cuts off half the field. Well, if he cuts off half the field, you get all the field. It's all coming to you, baby. Or mostly they're leaning that way. So yeah, I think it's going to be, what do they say? The internet democratized media and opinions. I think the passing game will be democratized. But frankly, ironically, what Houston does or has done without Nico Collins has been pretty democratized anyway. If you saw a little bit of that Niners game, it was scary diverse and really scary spread around.
Sean Keeler joining us from the Denver Post. And how big of a drop-off do you see this defense taking with Patrick Surtain out, Sean?
Some, but it's going to depend on the matchups. Again, if Houston's got, depending on what Collins does or doesn't do, you've got a lot of pretty good receivers. Kind of like the Broncos, you've got a lot of pretty good receivers. You don't have a Lamb and a Pickens that just shoot right out at you. It's going to vary week to week. I'm not sure that PS2 in this game would have mattered so much as what the safeties are going to and what the nickel guys are going to do. But if that's the trickle, but if the trickle effect is you're going to have less Jody Marin and less McMillan in the middle because you've got to kind of spill them outside more or diversify, which I don't think they're going to do. I think they're going to go Moss and Abram Drain on the outside. Then there's some carryover there, but Houston's a little different approach. And I think either way, it comes down to if the strength of your D gets home and can get to Stroud in time to cut those short lanes off. We'll see, but he's got a quick release, man. I think this is a tricky matchup for this defense with or without PS2.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting matchup all the way around. Houston is fascinating. You know, if you look at their defensive numbers, I mean, they're tops in a lot of the major categories that we talk about. But they also shut out Tennessee. They caught Baltimore at the right time and held them to a low scoring amount. So sometimes you can look at the stats and they can be deceiving a bit, but it does feel like Houston is kind of figuring some things out, and Stroud certainly having mostly a bounce back year from a season ago.
Yeah, and to your point, sometimes in this league and in this schedule and the marathon that you play to get to New Year's Eve and then through to 2026, it depends on sometimes when you play somebody. Would Bengals Broncos look different if it was Joe Flacco? Yeah. I mean, would it look much better for Cincinnati? Probably not, but it would have been, you know, a pulse and not just a shop window dummy getting pounded by Nick Bonino all night and Jonathan Cooper. So that timing matters. I'm not sure this is great time. It's weird because it's good timing for the Broncos, obviously, in that you're coming off probably your most complete performance of the season. You swung a game that everybody thought would be close and some people thought might be a Dallas upset. You win going away. But you're best player, and Houston's playing just coming off one of its best games against the Niners, who are also pretty beat up the way that the Cowboys are beat up. So push? I don't know. It's a tricky one because we got to do our picks here for the paper here pretty soon. It's a Wednesday, and we usually do this stuff by Thursday. And it's I'm heading out there, as you know, on Saturday, and I'm curious to see how that lands. As well on Sunday morning, because I do think this is a lot more challenging on paper than Dallas was, because they've got a defense that can match you and give your weaknesses problems and won't just let you run the ball the way Dallas's defense, that might be the worst NFL. I covered the Bengals on a beat for 3 years, right, in my 20s, the early aughts, the Bruce Coslett and Dick LeBeau Bengals. Dick LeBeau, good guy. Bruce, interesting guy. And I've never seen a run defense as bad as what Dallas put out there in like 25 years. I mean, that was Quinn Miners should just keep that footage for life and just tell his kids, this is how good I was friggin' Anthony Munoz out there. I was erasing people. And he's good. I don't know these Anthony Munoz, but that's what it looked like. And that's how bad Dallas is. Houston will be a completely different kettle of fish defensively, and I think that's gonna have to make everybody raise their games a little.
No question. Yeah, I think it's gonna be a completely different opponent coming up for Denver. All right, so the Broncos did end up signing 41-year-old tight end Mercedes Lewis to the practice squad. You put out a piece earlier that's like, Broncos, Sean Payton need to give quarterback Bo Nix Cadillac at NFL trade deadline, not a Mercedes. Well, they're gonna roll it out here, man. Pretty desperate for a tight end, and it's not a knock on him, but he's 41 playing tight end.
Yeah, and he's just there to block. Basically, you know what he's there to do? He's there to do what Paucho did. While Paucho he's there because of the Ben Powers injury, right? They like going too tights. They like to have the 12 set, the one back, the two tight. I think I've got that right. One back, two tight ends. To run out of and occasionally do some screen game and mix it up. So, yeah, he's essentially there. Funny thing is, and Mercedes Lewis was a good player for a long time. I remember him in the 2005 Sun Bowl. He was in the same draft as Jay Cutler.
Oh, yeah.
And he's here.
Yeah.
That's how long Mercedes Lewis has hung in the NFL, and good for him. I don't fault him that. And he's there to basically be a tackle. More or less in what they want to do, and as a situational guy. He's a big guy. He's smart, he's sharp. You know, it's literally a savvy KG veteran. You just go, here you go. You got one night to learn the playbook. Let's go. And we got one of our toughest games on Sunday. You can plug it. He'll probably not be active on Sunday, but you never know. I just wish they'd shoot a little higher, because it's clear you've got a team that is as good as your Super Bowl aspirations and Super Bowl talk want it to be, right? You're 6-2 now. Even if you go 500 the rest of the way, you're going to be a postseason team. Now it's about winning. It's about winning the division, right? You set goals, you set staggers. If you're Sean Payton, you're the Broncos. Now that you've got a division lead, you're through another unbeaten October, and what's the get fat part of your schedule? It's about winning the division. It's about getting that home game. But then it's about winning games in January. And I would think I would be willing to give up a fifth, sixth, or seventh rounder for then that could get another wide receiver or an upgrade at tight end for this team with a quarterback on a rookie contract as opposed to just sitting on those. But that's easy for me to say, and I know in real life it's hard to do because nobody wants fifth, sixth, or seventh unless they're just trying to get somebody out of the locker room. You know what I mean? They're going to hoard those. And try to hit you up for round four or better, and NFL GMs don't want to give those up.
Sean, how all that aside, you know, with the moves that they might make after the fact, I don't know how aggressive they're going to be, but just looking the rest of the way, you said it. I mean, even if they go 500, they're probably still a playoff team.
Yep.
Where do you think they end up? Like, how many wins do you think they finish up with? I think I thought the over under this year for them was like 10.5 or something. Do you think this is like a 12 win team potentially?
I mean, potentially, but if it's going to be a 12 win team, you got to win Sunday. You're going to need to get, so there's a lot of coin flips the rest of the way. And you can argue that, well, based on if they're better than last year, you should sweep Kansas City. Although, what do we take out of that second Kansas City game? I don't know. You take a lot from that first one.
Yeah,
you can't deny it. That was a win snapped away at the very end, basically, that you probably get 99.0001% of the time. So, I mean the takeaway where I think it could be a 12-win team. No, I think maybe you asked me of the rapid fire, would they win it at 10.5, and I said under. And what I didn't qualify is say, because I think they'll go 10-7. I still think 10-7, now you're feeling like a worst-case scenario, if that helps you. Like, I think this is what this month has done, getting some of the kinks out, and assuming you can adjust for not having your best player for 2 to 4
weeks.
In a tough part of the schedule. You could win. I don't think you're going to win more than 12. I think between 10 and 11 still feels like a pretty good number, and I think it still feels like a playoff team, but I don't know if it's a playoff team that hosts. But could you get there? Yeah, because if you're 12-5 and say you have to sweep Kansas City to do it or at least get one, you've probably won the division, and then you've got more of your fate in your hands and that stuff we talk about if the goal is A, hosting a playoff game, and then B, winning a playoff game. Step, moving forward, then that home game, having that here, just helps a bunch compared to what they've done on the road.
Sean Keeler joining us from the Denver Post. This Houston game is huge because if you can pull that off and get to 7-2, you've got the bye week with the Raiders and should be able to take that. Yeah, you should be able to get that. You could be 8-2 before you go up against in that monumental game against the Chiefs on November 16th.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's what's kind of big about this one coming up. And you can pad your conference record, which isn't great. And you've got some work to do on the division because of the tiebreaker that the Chargers have. If they could stop chartering and kind of get back to where they were. Conference, and then those conference games are going to pick up import. Boy, Sean Payton in October or something else. And
oh my
Sean
gosh,
Payton
yeah.
in October against the NFC. I think it's either 10-1 or not. It's pretty clear. I don't think there's more than one loss, if any, here in the last three seasons since he's come. So that's what he knows. It's what he's done. And now we get to the stuff that's really going to count. And I think now what this month has done is it's got you looking forward and looking down at everyone rather than looking up and in a position to have some control. And I think this week and next is going to determine just how much control that you have because the Chiefs aren't dead. We keep trying to have this night of the living Halloween week. It's night of the living dead. We keep trying to bury the Chiefs and they find a way. And as teams with generational quarterbacks do, as long as they're sitting on that generational quarterback, they're always going to be close to finding a way.
Yeah. It's every year. It seems like, the last 3 years we keep thinking, oh, at some point the Chiefs are going to fall, but
yeah,
here they are again. Going to make for a very, I hope, you know what, let's go both teams. Let's go Kansas City comes in at whatever, if 7-3 and the Broncos are 8-2, and let's just make that awesome and have that be one of the Broncos' biggest regular season wins in a very, very long time.
Yeah, it sets up well, and I think you might. I think you're probably 7-3 is worst case yourself. So I think you've got, if you want to look that far ahead, it's definitely for all the marbles and a tiebreaker leg up, and you're probably going to have at worst 2-7-3 teams. Pretty close getting into that, or no worse than 6-4 on the Kansas City side. Yeah, this is going to be a fun November. Colleges, maybe not so much.
Not so much.
The Broncos side, yeah, not. Although I think the Buffs will win this weekend. I do. Because
really?
Not that we were going to go there. Yeah, just they're so inconsistent, right? The only thing we can predict with the Buffs is they're going to be up and down. Well, it's up time.
Yeah, you know? that's decent point. Look at Iowa State and then what happened with
right.
Utah.
It's just, I always remind myself when I was sitting there Tuesday and he wasn't quite as chipper, Dion, as he was last week. No shock. We weren't talking about elk and moose in Estes Park this week. I think when they get humbled, everybody has to kind of eat the pie and go back at it and dig in. I don't think Arizona's that great. I think the Buffs are good at home, or at least feel like they've got it swinging at home. I think they're a different team on the road. Although, going forward, West Virginia's no great shakes. So, you know, somebody asked me, I looked at it, and I'm completely digressing, but with the remaining games on the Buff schedule, I think you've got one pretty sure L at K-State, depending on how that lands and where the Wildcats are. And then three coin tosses, frankly, because you've got the two Arizona schools at home. And ASU, you wouldn't like on paper, but it's not until you had Tempe, you'd have no shot. But you got it at Boulder. So we'll see. If they would not get this one done, the whole Juju talk is going to start bubbling up again. It's going to get loud, and they're going to have to ask some harder questions than I'm allowed to not ask going forward. But I think they're going to win. I do somehow. I think that was a nadir moment, and then at 4-5, we'll see. Are there two more wins there? I mean, maybe, but I don't know. Maybe one.
Yeah. Is Juju, I mean, is there any, are they in any fear of him going elsewhere next year?
A little, but it depends on who you ask. And there's a lot of fear about a lot of things that someday we'll get into, but we will see. We will see. They're, it's them, so you never say never. In prime land, you just don't.
You never do. Sean Keeler, always appreciate it, my friend. Great work as always. Fascinating articles, fascinating reads, and we'll look forward to what you come up with next week.
All right, thanks, dude. Talk to you.
All right, Sean Keeler, the Denver Post. Always appreciate his insight. Michael, I tell you what, let's jump out real quick and get the latest on the local sports flash.
This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.